Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Oh, man, if you're anything like me, you're totally missing out on cereal, because your cereal was such a big part of your childhood, but now you know carbs are a little unhealthy, too high in sugar, unhealthy food, I can't eat, blah, blah, blah. But no, we got you taken care of. 0 grams. We're talking about Magic Spoon. This cereal has 0 sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. 140 calories a serving. That's it. It's keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, soy free, low carb, and GMO free. Now, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but being a stoner who's trying to, you know, not pack on pounds, having Magic Spoon in the house makes for a great healthy dessert / late night snack / hungover breakfast when you just want some cereal, but you don't want to mess with the fruity flaws or whatever. So get yourself Magic Spoon. Their variety pack comes with 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. Last night, me and Tiff mixed cocoa with peanut butter, and it was awesome. It tastes just like the cereal from your childhood, but it's super nutritious. So go to magicspoon.com/ham to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code HAM at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/ham and use the code HAM, H-A-M, to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, standing 6'2", 298 pounds. Suck it, Mitch. From Nassau County, Long Island, the number one fuck boy, Johnny G. Joining me as always in High and Mighty Studios, my newly signed co-host, Arthur Gabers. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur, currently bothering my wife. Also joining me in the Heidi Mighty Studios, all recurring guests. Don't think any of them have been on at the same time before. They're all legends in their own podcasting game, and we are all different types of the same type of guy. I'm looking at the Zoom around for the four of us, and we are the worst game of guests who ever. From the Doughboys Podcast, it's Mike Mitchell. From the Action Boys Podcast, it's Ben Rogers. And from the Ball Talk Podcast, it's Charlie Sanders.
Woo. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
That's what I'm fucking talking about. I just sprained my wrist doing the Paulie hand. Mitch, we're all waiting for you to say like one thing.
I was really like, I was like, should I say how you doing? But I was afraid to do it.
Why?
Do you want to play a drop or something to make you feel more comfortable?
How you doing?
There you go.
Oh, that was
good.
Go.
That was good.
That was really
good. I like
good.
It. Yeah. I like it.
That was the best one yet. That's why you waited.
And we'll edit out all the practice ones you did before so that
leave in just a nice doing? Pause. Yeah.
Yeah, leave in the long pause.
Look, I'm an Irish. Being Italian or even pretending to be Italian, it's not my wheelhouse. I feel weird doing it. I'm an Irish guy.
You're not trying to get canceled out here.
No, when I grew up, like, it's funny. I remember fighting this kid, Anthony, who was my best friend. But I was fighting, like, we got into a fist fight, and I remember he called me like the slur for an Irish person. Like, he was like,
"Are you not allowed to say it?
The M word."
The M word.
The M word. Don't say it.
He said
the M word. He said the M word.
I said the M word.
He got canceled for saying the M word. I'm sorry. I have to ask the follow up. What is the M word?
I did the ancestry.com what's your heritage thingy where you like spit in a little cup and send it in and then they tell you what you are. And I was like sitting there waiting to find out what exotic crazy thing I had in my bloodline, and it turned out nothing. It was so disappointing. I was English, Irish, Scottish, and Welsh, and that's fucking it.
Yeah. That's what all us Caucasians do with the 23andMe is roll the dice that you have something you think, that you can say. I'm 1/16th sub-Saharan or whatever, you know, like just some distant thing. I'm like, I'm not just a part of the problem,
nope,
I swear.
I'm just a Liverpudlian bricklayer. That's what I am.
Ooh, I hope I get something good back on this because I've been working for the NAACP for a while now.
I got to prove it.
Hopefully they're not there when it comes in the mail.
Shit, I had them send it to my work address.
I don't know why I volunteered to do this.
Mine said four. It was 96% Irish and then 4% like Northern Europe. And then it updated. It was 100% Irish. It went from...
We thought we saw a great, great, wanted, great uncle that was British, but we removed that.
Are you guys paranoid about at all about like your genetic information being out there?
No. What are they going to do with it? They're not going to. God, they wouldn't.
I mean, there's got to be some sick fuck Doughboys fan out there that works at 23andMe. That's like.
Oh, he slipped in the Northern Europe part.
That's his jizz.
Yeah, he put a little of himself in there.
Oh, fuck. That was me that got in there.
I shouldn't have kissed it to 100% Irish. Why did I kiss his?
I got to stop kissing in the slides.
He was jacking off to Doughboys while he did the test.
Just tried to take a little sip of his spit, and I guess I backwashed.
I'm so close to
Northern
you,
Northern Europe, so he's like, he's like, I took a little sip when I was doing the test.
I love my Mitch. I love the Doughboys.
Burger Boy and the Big Cheese. They call it something different there.
we call it the Spoon Man.
Royale with cheese. That was
I'm waiting for a statute of limitations on a couple of things to pan out. Then I'll do the 23andMe. I don't want to get fucking Golden State Killer out there.
Yeah.
You need the rest of your family to like pass away so like they can't be.
Right. The second I do it, I'm like, I'm gonna do 23andMe, and then you guys read a headline like I'm arrested for old jerking off at work situations.
A McDonald's camera caught him. He left the bathroom door open a little bit in a McDonald's security.
I knew
camera.
When I found this spunk at work in 2002 that I should bag it and save it, and one day I'll figure out who did it.
Seth they Simons writes an article busting you.
They disgraced the town of Hempstead lifeguard shack bathroom.
Anyway, welcome to the Sopranos episode.
I just did a Sopranos
three
episode.
Three Irish guys and like 1.25 Italian guy are going to break down.
Rogers, are you 0.25 Italian?
No, I think that's Gabrus.
Oh, that's
no,
okay. Gabrus
I'm 0.5 Italian. Okay. My mom's whole side. And my dad's whole side, I don't know, which is part of the excitement of doing 23andMe.
Yeah.
I kind of want to do it just to undo like my brother's tattoos because I'd be like, turns out we're Polish, bud, because we don't know.
What
our,
did he think?
We thought German up until we were like 20.
Gabriel.
Didn't he get like the German like falcon or like eagle or whatever the fuck it is?
He got whatever the one.
Whatever the one that is holding the plus sign.
Kind of holding that like twisty plus sign.
That's not a good idea.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm saying, I think German.
We're Polish. He's like, this isn't about this is something bigger.
No, man, it doesn't. Who cares what the 23andMe fucking gives us back? It's more important than that.
Oh no.
But I just did a Sopranos episode of The Doughboys, so I thought, how else to coast off that airstream of the behind the paywall episode than to eliminate Nick Weiger from the conversation and add my friend who I've been screaming about Sopranos with on another podcast, Action Boys. And then I've been dying to see Charlie for a long time. And if I, one of a few interactions we've had in the last couple in the last year was Charlie texting me going, you were name dropped in this Sopranos Reddit thread that I'm deep in. I was like, thank you. So I gathered what? The fucking gang together to
what was the mention? I got to hear what the mention was.
I don't remember now, but it was someone there. Were, I mean, do you guys go on the Sopranos subreddit?
I don't know.
I'm looked at it.
I've looked at it before.
It was someone just being like, oh, this thing this guy says reminds me of something Gabrus said on his podcast or whatever. Something like that. It wasn't derogatory or anything.
Gabrus and I only go on the Fappening subreddit.
I'm still cranking it.
What's the action like on the Fappening subreddit? The 4 years out or so. Is it still
it's still hopping, man. It's hot as ever.
A lot of people have like we kind of there's a little talk of the Fappening, but mostly it's like we're on to like all new shit. We're like buying different stocks and stuff.
Yeah,
We've become our own stock stuff.
But yeah, it was someone just like referencing like, oh, Gabriel said this about.
I saw
Gabriel
at a construction site once do the same thing.
Do you guys know the number one fuck boy, Johnny Cakes, Gabrus?
Man, I just finished a rewatch like 3 months ago with Tiff. I hadn't watched it since it originally aired, so I definitely, this is probably my first catching every single episode for sure. And I read that book, The Sopranos Sessions, based off of Roger's Recco, and it really helped me lock in each episode and remember subplots and characters like a few episodes later. It was fucking I had a blast rewatching.
Yeah, I'm always slightly off the zeitgeist. I'm either before or after everyone else. And for some reason, I watched this last year. I like rewatched all of The Sopranos. I think it's because I just got that book. And so now I'm like, I was like, fuck, I wish I would have waited a year and watched with the rest of the fucking world during the pandemic.
You can always rewatch. It's eminently rewatchable.
It's so rewatchable. And then, and Sanders and I have been talking about The Sopranos pretty much on loop.
Since we met each other.
Yeah.
04? I mean,
since season five was on TV. Yeah.
it is the best show, but it is, I should get Soprano Sessions and read it and watch it again because it is that sort of thing of like character. They're like, oh, Sopranos thought that their audience was smart, so they didn't play dumb with the show at all. But it is too smart. There's characters that you can just not. You are like, who the fuck is that guy? Like that does.
I think
that
that's what
happen.
Makes it so rewatchable, though. Is then you can rewatch it and enjoy it on a whole nother level.
There's so many like interwoven elements and Easter eggs and stuff.
The dream stuff is so much better now than when it originally aired. Like, I'm more fascinated by the abstract stuff than when it first came out.
Now, is that 40 versus 20? Is that 38 versus 22? Because I don't think so.
I think it's because, like, at the time, there were plenty of 40-year-olds that were like, hey, what the fuck's with this dream shit? Whack somebody.
Yeah.
Less yakking, more whacking.
Yeah.
I was shocked by how short the dream stuff was because I watched with my mom.
Do you say mom the English version? It sounds like you're saying mom.
With my mom, yeah,
that's the 4% right there.
My accent's gotten worse since I've been back. I shouldn't stay here. It's terrible. But we were watching together, which was, you know, it's intense at times, but she hated all the dream sequence stuff, which she just didn't if it's like fake, I don't know what her deal is. She's like, it's fake. And I'm like, but the show is fake.
Yeah,
what the
every
fuck
show
are you talking
fake.
About? Every show is not real.
Sorry, Mom. I can't come to the funeral. I don't want my accent to peak again. I can't go home. I'm staying in Los Angeles. Give everybody my best.
Whose funeral is that for is the scary part I'm wondering.
Yeah, I'm going to just leave it open-ended.
It's coming, though. It's coming.
I guess I'll go to your funeral without you, Mike. How are you calling me?
From beyond.
The dream stuff isn't even, it's just like, it doesn't take up that much time of the show. It's so funny that people are upset about it because it's over quickly. You know what I mean? Like, it's just an episode.
I think people also roll into the one episode in the alternate, like, afterlife with Finnerty, Kevin Finnerty.
Yes, Kevin Finnerty.
I think that really fucked people up. Yeah. And that Kevin Finnerty episode, this is like the Irish guys talking about how great the Kevin Finnerty episode is.
Finally, we're represented.
Ah, oh, laddie.
The dream sequences were the best.
But that shit is so great now rewatching
it.
And then all the, like, what was that show? The Leftovers? Everybody kind of lost their shit at some of the stuff they did in The Leftovers. And then I finally watched it. I was like, oh, this is kind of like what, I mean, they're doing what The Sopranos did.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't see The Leftovers.
I will say the dream sequences, I really enjoy them. I hate dream sequences in dramas that just use it as like a, obviously you didn't kill Don Draper right here. Obviously Don Draper, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I hate those fake out dream sequences. And Sopranos did it once or twice, but then the dream sequences started to, like, you know, matter and be thematic and interesting.
I mean, it's such a cool, weird thing that you would never guess with a show like this. It's like, it's a mob show, but it's full of, like, superstition and like supernatural stuff constantly.
Yeah.
I never picked up on when they see Pussy in the
mirror,
looking in the mirror that one time.
Yes.
Oh, what a great pickup rewatching it.
Man, let me tell you, it is just when my mom was like, who is that again? Is that Big Pussy? She kept saying that the entire fucking show. I'm like, yeah, it's fucking, it's Big Pussy.
Another guy with my nickname. This is embarrassing.
Jesus Christ.
Mom, stop it.
That was more of a ding
with my nickname. Does that mean she has one nickname or are there a lot of Big Pussies out there?
I wish you were a little pussy. I killed that. Ran to my room.
Door slam.
Now, Little Pussy was a reference on The Sopranos.
Yes. That's
the pilot, right?
And I just rewatched the pilot. Yeah. It was.
When I was younger.
Before I had you.
You know what I've been...
Big Pussy. My Pussy.
Yeah, that's right. Have you guys been listening to Talking Sopranos?
I caught a couple. I was going to save it for the next time I do a rewatch.
It's fucking great. That's what I've been doing during the pandemic is I'll watch the episode on Sunday night and then Monday I'll listen to the podcast and it's fucking fantastic.
Oh, that's fun. I might have to do it's Bobby and Christopher, right?
Yeah.
And they're great. They have a great like comedy dynamic too. So it's like I listen partially for the analysis and the behind the scenes stuff, but also they're just really funny and they go off on crazy weird tangents and shit. It's really good.
I got
Michael Imperioli is a guy who I'm just surprised isn't just in more stuff constantly. I mean, I'm sure he is. There's a million things out there, but I he's so good in that
Whenever
show.
When he pops up, I'm always like, oh, fuck, yeah, he's good. Like,
yeah, totally.
What was that Ben Stiller Escape from Dennemora?
Yeah, he played Cuomo.
Oh, yeah.
He played Cuomo, and he's great.
Yes.
Yeah, he's great.
He's got the golden handcuffs of that Life on Mars season 12 shit. You know, he's just deep on Peacock. This show, Ben mentioned this when I started watching it. He's like, oh, it kind of makes you dislike other shows. And it knocked Mad Men and Breaking Bad down a peg in my book. I like those shows and I still like them. And we'll rewatch Mad Men at some point because we love that show. But after watching Sopranos, it's like all the not just the like basic premise, but there's like so many beats that are just like ripped off. And I mean, maybe Sopranos just set tone for like what the genre would be. Yeah.
Well, it does infuriate me anytime there's a new kind of flash in the pan sensation that somebody will start a new list of like the best shows of all time.
and Sopranos isn't one. And I'm like, you got to wait five years before you throw some of these shows on there, because like they are not going to age well. And time will go by, and I'm like, bar none, Sopranos is ahead of everybody by a head and shoulders.
For sure. Yeah.
Great shows have come and gone,
and
Sopranos are still... I mean, kids are watching Sopranos. Old people have been watching Sopranos forever. It's timeless and very specific to a time period, and still doesn't feel dated, which is crazy.
Yeah. I was watching this movie and I was looking up like trivia and factoids about it. And one of the things I found was David Chase really loved it. And so then I was like, oh, I wonder what other movies David Chase is into. So then I went down a rabbit hole of David Chase interviews. And in one of them for the Irish Times, of course, the...
That's all you read.
He kind of throws shade on other shows. He's like, I'll read about these other prestige television shows. And they're just, I won't name them. But they're just glorified cop shows. They're not really that good. They're not doing anything great. It really seems like he's talking about Dexter in the interview.
Oh, that's funny.
I was nervous that it was about The Wire for a second, because I do love The Wire. But I think Sopranos is... I watched Mad Men for the first time over the pandemic, and then watched Sopranos again my second rewatch ever. And I think Mad Men is like the second best show, but I think that Sopranos is better than everything else.
Sopranos.
It's the most of them, and the creator worked on it and everything, of course.
Right. Mad Men pilot got him the job.
Yeah,
that was a sample.
Oh, that's cool. There's so much like parallels of like the dual life, the sort of pops of violence, like so much fun stuff that they took from Sopranos for Mad Men and made it really work.
Have you guys read Difficult Men?
Yes, I have.
It's fucking great. But they talk about it's a book outlining the rise of TV
and
like in the late 90s, 2000s, and kind of how it's all about the protagonists in all these stories are quote unquote difficult men, and they follow the showrunners for each show, interviewing them and people who worked on them, and the David Chase part is the highlight of the book. It's definitely worth reading just for that. But they talk about hiring Matthew Weiner or is it Weiner? I can never remember.
Wooner.
I don't know.
It's Wooner.
Yeah.
Oh, I was waiting. everybody, it seems like no one really liked him, in that David Chase loved him because they were both art film nerds, and he knew all his references, and essentially David Chase just wrote the whole show, and now he had somebody who he liked. And the joke was I can't remember who said it, but it might have been David Chase, when they hired Weiner, it was like, well, we finally have a female writer in the writer's room.
Jesus.
Oh god. That is a very bad sign.
Yeah. So feel free to touch that one.
But they did have a female writer.
Yeah.
Weiner,
I mean,
brought
Landris.
Look at that. He brought art house film nerd with bad parents. Like, so David Chase is like, yeah, David Chase is like, you and I are going to be friends. Feel like I might be tight with them as well. rewatching the show, there's so rich, so many characters, and so much more stuff happens than you can remember in your head, obviously. Mm-hmm. But when you're like, oh, I know this part, this is the beats where this happens. And then there's like a whole nother subplot that you don't remember, and it just fucking shines. And for me on this rewatch, I am in love with Rosemary Abril. I am upset. Like, she's such a fun character. It's so awesome.
She looks great. She sounds even better. And you can almost know how she smells just by hearing her voice. Old tobacco, old shitty cigarettes. And
it's like Virginia Slims and like some kind of room spray. Yeah.
And yes,
like,
room, and like
Elizabeth Taylor Diamonds.
Yes.
I was like analyzing like every character, and then she is just supposed to be like, she's similar to Carmella, but then like has everything taken for her and is still kind of up.
Yeah,
like,
she's
upbeat
got more
about it.
More yeah. spiritual fortitude than Carmella does.
And she yeah. even has like a second helping a tragedy with all that shit with Joey Pants' character. What's his name?
Yeah. Ralphie, I think.
God, yeah.
Dude, on this rewatch, I could not stop the runner that Ralphie really liked the movie Gladiator.
God,
that
was so funny.
So fucking
dude,
funny.
The scene where he watches the Kirk Douglas Gladiator because Christopher recommended it to him, and he's like, they didn't have flat tops in ancient Rome.
And then when his wig falls off when they're dragging his body away, yeah. is such so funny.
It's fucking amazing.
I think that's the thing. When I was watching the show for the first time and he talked about how he liked Gladiator, I was probably like, yeah, Gladiator's awesome. I probably didn't like he is kind of making fun of the fact that he loves Gladiator, of course.
Right.
And that's watching this time around is just so fun seeing David Chase just make fun of different Italian people over and over again, which as an Irishman, I enjoyed quite a bit. It was one of my favorite things about it.
Rogers and I talk about this on Action Boys, but there's like the sensitive bro cinema where it's like, you know, Fincher and Nolan and these like artistic bros, and I think Gibson. Gladiator is one of the, because like they were finally like
Gladiator's
best picture,
in there for sure. Yeah,
best picture that has violence and sex and killing in it. Yeah,
no, because this is fucking art, man. This is like a fucking masterpiece.
It's based on a true story. Marcus Aurelius is real.
Yo, for real, go see Good Will Hunting. All right,
another one of those.
Seriously, go see it. Get in your car right now and go.
I read this. This isn't an idea I had myself. I read it on Reddit, but I really like it. It's turned into a poem for some reason. Ralph is obsessed with Gladiator, and then when he dies in a gladiatorial fight. Like him and Tony are in a kitchen armed with pots and pans, swinging at each other like gladiators.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really interesting little touch.
Yeah, and he fucking busts the dude's eye out in the back of the bin.
Georgie
swinging the fucking mace around.
Georgie, his fucking poor ass.
Oh. I know. He gets beat up a lot.
Yeah. And just the justification to have anybody around at any time. He's a good earner.
Yeah.
Right. I know, it's all about money.
But it is, because it is like work where it's like, I fucking hate this guy. It's like, but I have to sit next to him every single day so I can make 75 grand a year. And it's like, in this case, sometimes they're killers. Like, this is
my best earner.
It does kind of feel like it's a critique of capitalism in a way.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and they always make a point to show you how fucking shitty everybody is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love how
Tony Tony's the most shitty. He's the shittiest guy. That's something watching this time. I was like, outside of like people that they like truly make you hate, Tony is right up there with them. When he there's that scene where, and my buddy Dano pointed this out, but he was like, watch out for that scene where Janice is like trying to work on her temper, and then Tony.
Oh, yeah.
Just
ruins her progress.
And it's so great because, like, he's also doing his mom's shit. Like,
oh,
that's
totally.
That's
oh my God,
that's
yeah,
100% how his mom would manipulate things. And, like, he is that.
Yeah.
As much as he likes to think he's his father's son and stuff, he has all those fucking awful, like, manipulative instincts.
He's like the worst, like, alpha male version of his mom. It's the monster. It's like if his mom turned into like a monster that would kill people. That's what he became. It's horrifying.
Dude, me and Gabriel, speaking of Olivia Soprano, me and Gabriel made the same joke to each other. I was looking up the picture on Google image search. We were watching Mandalorian, and when Luke pops up, he sent me a picture of like the CGI Olivia. And I was literally was looking the same fucking photo up to send to him.
Goodbye, Tony. It's like chopped together like a student film.
What's really funny is at the time when they were putting that together, you know, they were like, this looks fucking awesome.
Yeah,
it
nobody
worked
will
perfectly.
Notice.
I gotta say, on my first when I rewatched it, like whatever this was, like 6 years ago or 5 or 6 years ago, and that was the first time I rewatched it, I was like, that actually looks pretty good. And then when I rewatched it this time, I was like, that looks like shit. I didn't say anything at all. And then my mom didn't notice that she was like a fucked up monster. But her face was turning, but her head was still. It was fucking disgusting.
It was like the like the Conan O'Brien mouth sketches.
Totally.
And it's Brian like a lot of shots from voice. Behind that look like fucking psycho, like just like a wig.
On this viewing, something that I picked up, I mean, this is obvious in most dramas, but they really put you in Tony's headspace where you're like, this guy's a monster, this guy's a monster. And then something annoys Tony, and the way they shoot it and produce it, it annoys you, the viewer.
Yes,
like
totally.
Someone asking
They're
him
so
questions. Like, like when Paulie's on one with like his questions or whatever, and you're like, he is annoying.
Yes.
And then it's like anything is redeemable. Like when he flips out on someone, you're like, yes, she won.
Yeah.
Why
You're
was
good
she
at making
being
you
such
feel like a
cunt?
Monster.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
yes, totally.
probably the most so is like how much it makes you want Melfi to tell Tony that she got fucking raped in the parking lot.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, totally.
That episode is awesome when she.
You're
the ending of that episode
it.
Is great.
You,
yeah.
You're dying for him to for her to go to the dark side and say, kill all these guys and become a fucking murderer.
Yeah.
Can I tell you guys one of my, might be my all time favorite moment of Sopranos? One thing I love about it is that it's open ended. We never find out what happens to the Russian. We'll never really know what happened at the end, et cetera, et cetera. I love that. But then it's peppered in with all these little tiny moments of that. There's one, I believe it's season 4, but I'm not 100% sure. Tony is mad at Christopher for something, like him and Polly are fighting or something. And he calls him into his office and he's like, I need to talk to you, whatever. And Christopher comes in and he sits down and Christopher goes, is this about the Easter baskets? And then Tony goes, I don't know what that is, and I don't want to know. And then it's never mentioned again. So you as an audience member are just left to imagine what the fuck that scam might be.
That's fucking great.
God, yeah, Sanders, you're so right. Like, that's one of the things I noticed when it was first airing, because my mom would watch it and then try to solve, is so used to procedurals and shit, she would try to like, so it's like that's
solve
kind of,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're leaving DNA on the stuff, and it's like, no, that's not how.
It's not coming back.
Yeah, that's not how the
it's
show.
Not
works.
This kind of show. Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is that my mom watched Mad Men, she loved it, and I think the reason that you do love Mad Men is because it does have like kind of like a hour long drama thing to it, where like you're like, are they going to sell the thing to Pillsbury or whatever? Are they going to fucking, right. Or will they do the sale? And that feels like a shitty, like there is the shittier version of that show, which I think Matthew Weiner has said that there is like a version of that show where every week is like they're selling a new ad and then they do it or not.
Right.
And it was fun to watch my mom, who like at first she didn't like it. And I do think that I talk about my mom too much, but
you've been living with her for 4 months.
Yeah, I've been
and
living
you
with her
talked
for
about her too much before.
He's like, maybe she wants to talk. He moves the camera over. There's just a skeleton.
Do you remember how you made that?
There's
psycho
a CGI.
Reference?
Yeah. There's
she's
a
holding
CGI
the camera,
Mitch's mom.
Filming him the whole- Mom, turn the camera around on yourself. Say hi to the guys.
I have not psychoed my mom yet. She's still around, but. It was fun to watch her, like, I mean, this is the only person I can do it with, but it was fun to watch her like slowly get into the show as the show went along, because she at first was like, I don't know about the show. The first couple episodes, she didn't like love the first couple episodes. And honestly, the first season does feel like a Scorsese HBO show. It doesn't, and I love Scorsese, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like the high art. I mean, it's still a great show from the start. But the first season just feels a
better.
Little bit.
You're right.
It gets way, way better.
Yeah.
And that's
what we release. Should we do an It Gets Better video about people watching The Sopranos?
Us four straight white men
like
here
it.
To tell you.
It gets better. Trust me.
Life gets better. What are you talking about? Sopranos season 3, by the way. You're going to love it. You said it before, like how shitty all these people are. One of my things I love about the show that on this watch is how kings of tiny kingdoms they are, like, and how the show just kind of lets you remind you of that every once in a while. When Christopher fucking puts his like finger on the fish scale to like not pay full, like puts the matchbook in the fish scale to not pay full price, and like and when you hear, like, I forget who said it might have been Rogers, someone I was talking to was like, and when you realize like it's all this crazy ass drama, danger, violent. Like, is he going to make it or not? Is to get like a slightly bigger boat to have in the Jersey Harbor. It's yeah, like yeah. such a fucking
such small stakes, really.
Yeah. And it's like, how are we going to pay for our kids' college? Which is like all I heard growing up from my dad. And it's like, this guy is a fucking violent. To find out, like, someone was like, they're worth, like, you know, $1.6 million or something. It's, like, not an insane amount of money. And yeah. he's the boss.
I think it's the Soprano sessions where Chase brings up the episode where they go to Italy. And he's like, this is kind of a stretch because normally these guys don't leave a four-block radius, like, their entire fucking lives.
Man, that episode is so perfect that they, like, don't like it. It's so great for these guys, these Italian guys, to go over to Italy and being like, and Paulie's just having a fucking terrible time.
Hey, where's the gravy? And they're like, I think he wants pasta with sauce. And they're all roasting him.
Yeah, they're all making fun of him.
He's so excited to like see Italy, and they only go to like the Times Square of Italy, more or less. Christopher just does heroin the whole time and misses all. He's like, I gotta go see the big hole. He like, doesn't do anything.
He never does it. David Chase is in that episode.
Yes, he's one of the guys at the table next to him, right?
And then he's in another one where he's flying from Italy, too,
it's
right?
when the Italian hitman are flying over to
Flying
back to Italy, maybe. Yeah. He's on the plane. Did you guys see the movie?
Phil Leotardo. I just remember that moment where he's talking to all his kids about the name. He's like, we were Leonardo, but they fucked it up at Ellis Island. And they made us Leotardo. Sounds like Reotardo.
And it's like at a funeral and the kids are like 4 through 13. And like...
Okay. Who is this guy?
Man, you guys... when Phil shows up, he's... Again, talking about that Tony POV thing. When Phil shows up, you're like, this guy's a problem. He's trouble.
Immediately.
And he's the least dumbest, least like aggressive guy that Tony rubs up against. And you're like, he's actually scared.
And has
like
hardcore code.
Yeah. He's like a real gangster. Yeah. Well, it's funny. Like you were mentioning, like realizing how small stakes it was or whatever. Did you guys see the movie Inside Llewyn Davis?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I love
it. So that movie, yeah, me too. That movie did what I feel like Sopranos does like once a season, if not more, which is like the whole movie I'm watching it, I'm going, oh, this is like a template for Bob Dylan. This is a template for Bob Dylan. Llewyn Davis is, you know, the avatar of Bob Dylan. And then the very last scene, he walks through the club and Bob Dylan's playing and you're like, oh, he's nobody. He's not going to make it.
Yeah.
And Sopranos had a similar thing where you'd every once in a while be reminded like, oh, this is like at best the B team. Like they're the Jersey guys. They're not even the mafia we've seen in most movies, you know?
Yeah. Right. They probably get wiped out at the end of the series is like what people, when people try to break it down. When I first, it is open-ended, of course. But when I first watched it, I liked the idea. I remember I lived in this house in LA, like near Miracle Mile. And I was it was one of those like those places that you just get with people on Craigslist. It was a fucking three people I didn't know when I first moved to LA. And it was awful. And then one of my roommates, this guy who was most likely, I mean, he was a drug addict and he was a gambler. And like, he just like, our rent money wouldn't be around. And then one day, the Sparklets guy came to the door and I was like, hello. And he's like, you guys owe us like $7,000. It was like, I was like, what? How is that even in water? And I went to fill up the Sparklets and it was filled with hose water. Like this is kind of like what was happening at this house. But I remember the last episode aired and he was like, that's fucking bullshit. He was so mad at the last episode because he wanted some sort of closure on it. And I loved it. I loved the last episode.
Oh yeah. It was great.
It's great, and I love the idea of Tony like having to live in fear, and that's what I kind of thought it was. But do you after rewatching it, do you think that, I know this is a stupid question, but do you think that he was supposed to die right there? Like watching it again, I'm like,
yes,
he was supposed to die there, wasn't
100%.
He?
100%.
Yeah, but I guess the ending tells you, if not there, the next day, the next week, right? Like that's,
you know, it could be either. That's what's fun about it. Right. To me, I'm like, I feel very sure that Paulie and Patsy betrayed Tony and hooked up with the New York guys and he got killed.
Oh, I don't think Paulie betrayed him.
You don't think so?
No, I think he went up to the lot because I think
because he didn't get the respect he expected from New York.
He found out that they were just like playing him, and that like really hurt his feelings.
When he was like, "Hey, so-and-so told you about me."
I remember he was eating a chocolate mousse in that scene, and that added some kind of. He felt like a little kid or something the way he's like swirling his mousse while he talked to Johnny Sack.
Man, Paulie is the most fun character and then the saddest character after like one.
He's so sad in this watch through. So
he's
such
the most
a
pathetic.
Sad,
he's so pathetic. He doesn't have anything else. And he's the guy who survives. Like he presumably would be running the Jersey family like as the show goes on.
Yes,
he survived the first one. Too like
yes,
right.
That's
like,
right.
I got through that Columbo shit by the skin of my nuts.
Yeah,
only exactly. He's only beaten patheticness by the funniest character, which I know Gabrus, you think the same as Artie. Who it's insane that Artie is so pathetic and so funny, and it's insane to me that he never won an Emmy. Like I was looking at the people who won an Emmy, and there is a good list of it's Adriana and Christopher, Michael Imperioli, and then and Joey Pants won one, and then Tony and Carmella won one. But
hell yeah.
But he's so good that I just am like, I mean, the Emmys are stupid, of course, but he's so fucking good the entire show. He's
I thirst for an Emmy. I'm up at night wondering why I got beat up for an Emmy three times. You're not stupid.
All right. It's been killing me.
I want nothing more.
Okay. Inside Llewyn Davis is based on somebody, and it's been killing me. It's Dave Van Ronk.
I've heard of him, but I don't know.
Who is indeed a dude who like lost out and like fucking Dylan took his arrangement for House of the Rising Sun.
Whoa.
Oh man. Fuck.
Dylan would hear him play it every night and then went up. This is like classic shitty stuff that I feel like we can all relate to. Dylan called him and was like, "Hey man, I got a record contract. Do you mind if I did your arrangement for House of the Rising Sun?" And Dave's like,
after
no.
After he'd already done it.
He's like, don't do it. And he's like, well, I already did it.
Been there. I know.
Oh, yeah. Many times.
Relatable.
Yes.
Speaking of music, the music UCB in Sopranos is fucking awesome.
I was about to say UCB is like 10,000 Llewyn Davises.
Yeah. Mr. Kennedy.
Do me a sketch from the many jackets of Llewyn Davis.
Hello, Fresh. What's up, listeners? I'm talking about, I don't want to call you S-heads during a Hello Fresh ad. That's not fair to Hello Fresh because they do such a good job cutting out all the stressful meal planning and grocery store trips. So all you have to do is cook and get dinner on the table, and it takes less than 30 minutes. It's a very specific time for a lot of us in our lives. I know some of you are just going about your lives normally, but some of us are more trapped at home and forced. Here, HelloFresh has so much good stuff about it. Like it's healthier food choices. You're cutting down on grocery bills. You're cutting down on food waste. But I'm not going to lie. One of my favorite things about belonging to HelloFresh is we don't have to talk about what we want to eat that night. HelloFresh has a high enough hit rate. Like their stuff is all good. So I'm never complaining about one of their dishes arriving. So you're just excited to not have to choose. You don't have to have the conversation. I don't care whatever you want. Like now maybe I'm just airing marriage issues on a podcast ad, which is not cool. Because HelloFresh is cool. They're offering 23 plus recipes each week. You got to check it out for yourself. But trust me when I say having the pressure taken off of having to choose, of just losing that decision, has really freed up my brain and my mind. So I highly recommend it for you. Not to mention it's, you know, less food waste, cheaper than going grocery shopping, cheaper than ordering in, healthier than all that. So go to HelloFresh.com/10high and use code 10high, 10HIGH, for 10 free meals, including free shipping. So go to HelloFresh.com/10high and use code 10high for 10 free meals, including free shipping. The fucking music rules. Even the corny ass Italian aria that plays for Carmella in like 100 episodes. I'm fucking here for all the music choices are exciting. And the music choices and the pop culture conversations are like, I think I have a similar taste to David Chase, which I think, or he has just impeccable taste and everything he likes is because the shit they talk about is shit I want to talk about too, which is like rare on a show like this.
Well, Steven Van Zandt helped pick the music. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, that's fun. That fucking makes sense.
Yeah. And David Chase said he wanted it to be music, not all of the music, but a lot of the music to be music Tony and Carmella would have listened to in high school.
Oh, cool. Hence that makes sense.
And shit like that.
The stuff that Tony listens to.
You
can tell. I mean, there's a major difference between the show, what the show uses for a lot of those montages versus like the shit Tony's singing.
What
like
he's listening.
Yes, the classic rock bullshit.
Yeah. When Tony is a Jersey dad also. So
he's also a suburban Jersey dad. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm funny. A fool to do your dirty work.
I like he comes down the stairs. I forget which episode in his robe, and there's something happening in the kitchen. He comes down and he's singing "Comfortably Numb."
All right, yeah.
My hands felt like two balloons.
And then that's the song Christopher dies to.
I didn't notice that connection. That's amazing.
It plays plays well when Christopher almost the two girls almost slam into him. But
yes, that's right.
Talking about little things that like throwaway things that stick with you. This minor ass thing happened, and I noticed it on this watch. When they're having that funeral where Janice is like on one, where she's like, now everyone sit in a circle and say is so stressed. There's a dude in the background who comes down the stairs, never fully entered,
goes back up,
just see his chest, you never see his hat, and then he just turns and goes right
back
up.
That's so fucking funny.
And she's at peak, like, all right, and then you'll say something, and you just see the guy in the background be like, I'll fucking out of here.
Now, that looks, it's so real that it almost looks like it was a mistake that just worked out well, like an extra was coming down and then realized they were shooting. Or did they plan it? I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Could easily be like the PA who's supposed to be locking up the stairs thinking
and it just was a happy accident.
God, there's so, oh man. The one of the songs that I really love is this Kinks song, Living on a Thin Line.
I was just about to bring it up. I love that song.
I love how they use it. It works so fucking well. And the episode is just so sad.
The episode's awesome.
Which episode is that one in?
University.
Oh yeah.
And does it play in the strip club at the end or something?
It plays in the strip club at the end.
Ooh. Oh yeah, it's one of those ones the music moments I was thinking of. Glad Tidings, that whole episode when
that's so good.
When Tony is like the bear too, and he comes out at the end, like that song. That, it plays, I think, maybe throughout that episode, or maybe even a couple times in the season, right? But it's definitely
when
he kills Tony B. Yeah, and that. I feel like I heard that song and I knew Van Morrison, and then I loved Glad Tidings. Like, that was maybe my introduction to Glad Tidings when I was in college or whatever. But yeah, that the living on a Thin Line was another one. And then the last one is, I love the episode where the FBI is when they play
the mashup.
Yeah, the mashup.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
the mashup is great.
It's the Dragnet theme song? No.
Yeah. I think.
No, I can't remember what TV show it's from, but then it's also with fucking I'll Be
Every
Watching
You.
Take.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'll be watching.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I love the episodes after 9/11 where like the FBI is like
following you guys.
Yeah,
anymore.
Exactly. It's like that's so real where it's like, do you have an and the that runner where they're all kind of attuned to that they did do some work with these two Middle Eastern guys.
Yes.
Mahmoud and
I love
and they keep getting their names wrong.
Yeah. And whenever the FBI is like, so if you just know anything, there you always see them being like, I wonder if those guys, like, instantly ready to turn on those guys because
I can't remember the exact quote, but there's a point where Christopher is talking to someone about whether those guys were terrorists. And he's like, I don't think Mahmoud, he was married. He had a dog.
I think he names the breed of his dog.
Yeah,
right?
Something like that. He had a Cocker Spaniel or something.
Cocker Spaniel.
It was Peter Gunn.
Peter Gunn.
Yeah.
Right, close.
But isn't Christopher the one that doesn't Christopher say something in that episode when Janice is going around the circle of people to say stuff? I feel like
he says, even if you got everybody together in the world, we couldn't figure out who was who, even with computers.
Because he's all fucking stoned
he's
out.
Yeah.
He talks for a really long time.
In
that scene, there's a scene where there's an entire huge family going on, like, and I think it's this scene, and Christopher and Adriana are just sitting there sort of like not doing anything, and they look completely different than they look like, and me and Tiffany goes, man, does that look like us at our family outings? And I was like, oh my God.
That's
it's like
hilarious.
Two hipsters just sitting there going, what the fuck are these people talking about?
That's funny. You know, dude, Mitch, you fuck.
I was just going to bring up Cleaver.
I want to talk about Cleaver.
Let's go Cleaver.
Let me say this really quick. Mitch, you were talking about John Ventimiglia that plays Artie not getting an Emmy. He definitely should have got an Emmy. Like me, but I just watched the episode where he tries to be a gangster. He like loans this French guy money.
Man.
Yes.
And then he tries to enforce on him and he can't do it.
I feel like
he's great in that.
Of all the Sopranos characters, I relate to Artie the most, but also I never had the cool, like Artie was cool. That's like the funny thing that they refer to Artie as like having he had hair and he was like the badass of the bunch. They talk about that all the time. And
yeah, I wonder if he's going to be in Saints of Newark, like as the heavy, as like the badass.
Oh, that's crazy.
He puts his earring back in when he's fighting.
The dude rips it out in the tuffle. So awesome.
Oh, man.
That's part of the sadness that they do well, where it's like now he's got an earring and you can see his wife giving him dirty looks and he's desperate with like the young girl, the young trim.
And then, you know, you feel pretty good when he beats the shit out of Benny. I mean, like it is kind of.
Benny is fucking Boner from Growing Pains, right?
Yeah.
From Doogie Howser.
Doogie Howser. Right. Sorry. Ginzo neighbor friend.
Does Benny kill Phil Leotardo too, or is he there with that?
No, a character named Walden does.
Oh, okay, all right.
Because I remember they make fun of what kind of a name is that for an Italian, Walden, when they're assigning the job.
That reminds me of something too. In the book, they talk about how they eventually had trouble like finding Italian American actors, and I'm just reading that weeping.
What about me? Yeah.
They went through every Italian.
They're like,
I love that they just made the one dude a twin just to keep him around. After they whack him, it's like, and he had a twin brother, and they write that in, and like
which
he
is
gets all
a-
weepy.
It's so crazy. I mean, he holds a, like, he's outside Tony's house drunk
with a
holding
gun,
gun trying to like, and then
does he piss on his lawn or something?
He pisses in the pool.
Okay.
And then
yeah.
at the end his son is marrying Tony's daughter. Like that's the
right. Oh, my God. Oh man, that's amazing.
Fucking crazy.
Furio, so fun. What a fun. Yeah. He was my favorite character when the show aired. Rewatching it this time around, I think like my favorite character switches like every episode, but I think I ended with like loving Carmella. But when I first watched it, Furio was the coolest, and then rewatching it now,
it's funny so
funny
how lame he is and how attracted the women are to him.
Yes!
Like it's perfect. It's fucking perfect.
But it worked on me for some reason when I was a kid. I was like, oh, cool. And then I'm like, what are these fucking shirts he's wearing and shit?
That's his trademark.
He's dressed like Judge Dredd at one point.
I'm just I just remembered a great joke. At Christopher's funeral, when Tony's looking around and Daniel Baldwin just gives him a head nod.
Yeah, that's so funny.
So segue to Cleaver. Such a fun fucking... What a show to have this runner of like, we're going to see clips from like a hokey horror movie that happens that will eventually have a major effect on storylines. Like that's such a fucking...
It's genius.
It's Carmine confident
Jr.
as fuck too.
He's getting another side of Carmine Jr.
Yes, that's right. Because he's produced movies, albeit porn. But
they're all
produced
pornos. Yeah.
Yeah. That actor who's playing Carmine, he's so fun. When he gets ahi salad and seltzer.
Dude, I love nothing. No scene. That's the best written scene in the history of show business because it tells you everything you need to know about both characters. They sit down at the country club. The waitress comes up. Ahi tuna seared on a bed of greens. And then it cuts to Tony. He goes, Philly cheesesteak. It's like, you might as well have the characters say who they are. You know?
That to me is also that, like, I feel it's watching it this time. I was just like trying to figure out who, like, David Chase kind of is condemning in the show and who he's not, like, which maybe is me reading too much into it, but it's that sort of thing of like the show that is about change and the people who kind of like try to change the most and those who kind of don't want to change at all. And for me, I like
the Gary Cooper types.
That's
whatever happened.
He brings him up so much.
I felt bad for AJ. Like I like the person that everyone was like, he's such a whiny baby, which he is.
Yeah.
And he is like an annoying little guy. I'm like, oh, I kind of like feel bad. And it's the same thing with Little Carmine. I'm like, Little Carmine is like a true idiot, but he also is a guy who's like, hey, this is too much for me, and I'm going
to trying to get out.
He tries to get out of it. And you kind of are like, this guy is one of the smartest people in the entire show.
Yeah, he's
like
choosing to be happy.
He's choosing to be happy. And like, and that's the thing with like, AJ is like a piece of shit, but like Meadow is so much smarter than him and then like decides to kind of look the other way, which to me is like kind of more of, it's condemning her more than it is to him. He, even though he sucks and he's annoying, I get that he's annoying.
David Chase said, I think like this is when he was promoting his movie. They were asking him about like where the family would end up. And he had this really smart take on AJ about how the beauty of like the American experience is he's not a fucking, he's an awful person. And he's going to be terrible, yes, but he's not a fucking killer. He's not a sociopath.
He's one click better than his dad.
And then to add like the ultimate burn, he's like, he'd probably wind up moving to LA and becoming a network executive.
And it does end with him getting like a PA job, right?
That's right. Yeah. He's complaining about his PA job.
Which, it's so great that show also just, it fucking... I love that the entertainment world got involved in it in any way. And then it is very sad that the screenwriter friend gets fucking killed.
JT Nolan.
He's so great. Oh, my God.
He's a fantastic character. Tim Daly is so good in that
He's
role.
He's so good in that.
Yeah.
Last thing Christopher does, basically.
We're all writers. I feel like JT Nolan was David Chase, who is a writer, just taking a shot at like, showbiz writers are scumbags. we all do. And I was like, I recognize, hey, I hate to admit it, I recognize so much of myself in JT Dolan. Like, ego-driven.
When he's talking about the check coming in for the Dick Wolf.
Yes.
Like, that's the most relatable, obnoxious shit ever. It's like, I'm going to be all right. I got something lined
up. Hey,
speaking of characters who pop in and are fucking Robert Patrick.
Oh my god!
That
another pathetic character.
Pathetic character.
So many good pathetic losers.
Davey Scatino.
It's just so fucking good. Like that whole pair of like, I don't get involved with friends. Okay, and then he takes that like comes in on his own and
just
Tony's
a shark,
like,
man. Just a fucking
Tony's like,
killer.
Fuck you, pal.
I tried to warn you.
How much is he in for? Four. What is it? Boxes of crackers.
Seven
or
boxes of ZD or something.
Seven boxes of ZD, right?
Do you think it was intentional that they made the T-1000, which is like the scariest, coolest kind of bad guy, and then just made him the most fucking pathetic? He's like the most pathetic.
He's
piece
so
of
pathetic.
Shit.
I don't know.
They're fucking. Oh, that's another topic I want to talk about because you talked about the Easter baskets thing, the world building that this show does. Going back to the fucking Robert Patrick shit, the cooler, they're like taking his coolers that are coming in because they're like, oh. And then for the next couple of episodes, every character's got
a
brand new cooler. Red cooler.
Dude, there's cleaver hats throughout the rest of the fucking series.
Yes, it's cleaver hats. It's the free, it's the free shit that like is the most mafia thing. It's like anything that was a hookup and maybe not even mafia, but at least Italian American, like in my family and friend group, it was like shit you got for free was great, even if it was like,
yes,
it's like a higher value than if you bought something really fancy.
Right. If you bought something nice, it's not as good as getting something shitty for free.
My cousin did he toured the country with Shadow Stevens, American Top 40. This is in like 1990. So Shadow Stevens
was a radio DJ, and he had a
Center
top,
Square.
Yeah, he had a top 40 radio show, and he would go to malls throughout the country doing these like promotions for his show. So my cousin was, I think, like essentially like a roadie for him for a summer. And so they came through Buffalo, and it was the biggest fucking deal. We got to cut to the front of the line for one of those blue screen, like you could lip sync a song and they'd like put shit in the back. So we got to do that. Oh, man. I felt like a fucking rock star. And then the sponsors were like Carefree Gum and then some other shitty. And so we had duffel bags full of like two packs of like Carefree Gum that we must have been giving away for Halloween for a solid 5 years.
They were
disgusting at a certain point.
It sadly mirrors like Hollywood too, in that I remember being at an event for Futurama when I worked over at The Simpsons, and at the end they were like, you can keep like the centerpieces for like you can take home the centerpieces. And I swear to God, a lady fucking just like fucking hip checked me because there were DVDs in the centerpieces, and that she was just like grabbing multiple centerpieces like a fucking like rolling through the place, just and I was like, this is fucking great. And that's exactly what Sopranos reminds me of.
So undignified.
My mom, when my dad was in hospice, my mom would take like sleeves of styrofoam cups from like the hospice kitchen.
That's
and she'd be like, because
I like
she
that.
Was clearly in like severe distress and like her anxiety. So her like hoarding and free, she would like be like, I actually use these, so this is good. It's like, Mom, it's okay.
We're gonna cups from
they rob house. Lauren Bacall for that phone.
Yes, that's
oh,
right.
Oh yeah, for her gift for a swag bag. Yeah, the mugger.
My family
God,
drove
so
a Chevy Astro van for like 15 years. Those things are tanks. You still see them on the road out here in LA.
Yeah,
it's like one of the longest running cars. Like,
it's like
on
the backup. It's second to the pickup truck for like random maintenance guy with a car full of stuff.
So when my dad finally sold the Astro van to a guy who like remodeled boats, he was going through cleaning it, and the back, like they had in the way back, there were these two armrests that you would lift open and you could like put shit in there. And they were full of old Lorna Doone, like cracker cookies that my grandma, we would pick my grandma up from the old folks home when she would visit her sister there. And she would be like, I have a special surprise for you boys. Lorna Doone's. And we'd be like, great.
The most disappointing.
Yeah. And so then we just like.
I have some Necco wafers for you.
Just open those shoulder things and just chuck them in there. And over like the course of 15 years, there was like 300 Lorna Doone's in the car.
Italian desserts are so awful for kids because they all are designed to be eaten with coffee. Like it's all like the driest shit in the world. And when you're a kid and it's like, Pop brought a plate of cookies and you're like, fuck. And you open it and it's like a green leaf with raspberry jam. Yeah. You're like, what the fuck? It's like the driest fucking, you know, dunk it in your espresso, 12-year-old boy.
12-year-old.
Which is crazy because they, I mean, like in their desserts are good, but they have the best food. And in the show too, there's so much good food. And it's great.
I almost replied to some fucking stranger on Twitter, which is like so unlike me. And like, I had to stop myself from doing it, but they just wrote like, Brad Pitt is the best eating actor of his generation. And in my head, I was like, no, that's James Gandolfini. Yeah.
Brad Pitt, good. He Brad eats Pitt in a good. Lot of
good.
His movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gandolfini's character is, yeah, he's, I can listen to him. And I have like, I don't like, I can ASMR of him just eating gobble.
Yeah, what Rogers is miming, the poking of the fork, is just like so funny.
There's so many great, relatable fucking things. Like when he goes to Liv's house early on and he's like, brings her, and she's like, yeah, have some eggplant. He's like, I'm not hungry. She's like, yeah. And you just see her take the eggplant out,
she's
put it on the
do
table.
It anyway.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm not hungry. And she goes, uh-huh. And she just puts it down, puts a fork, and he just like sits down and fucking. And then whenever he's by himself, like whenever he's in the kitchen with Carm, Carm gives him like a nice plate out of the microwave. But when you see him by himself, he sits down with like the Tupperware bin and just eats cold, yeah. like a big plate of random pasta and shit. It's so fucking real.
It's so real. I was thinking about like, now I can't remember what spurred this thought, but it was something we were talking about. One detail I really like is like all the kind of intermeshing of the real world. Like there's an episode, I believe in season 4, where it's Carmela's birthday and AJ gives her a DVD copy of The Matrix as a gift. Yeah. And it's like not wrapped. Yeah. And the really funny part is Joe Pantaleone is in The Matrix.
Yes. Yes.
So in this world, both Joe Pantaleone and Ralphie exist.
I didn't even think of that. That's really fucking funny. I like how much like Carmela likes movies. Like that's a thing that they give her to make her, and like that gives her like believable depth. You know what I mean? It's always like in shows, it's always like she's like, but she's also a sniper. And this, it's like the housewife likes movies. It's like weirdly rich for then for like late 90s television. Right.
God, remember when they bring up Billy Budd and how it's about homosexuality and they're both like, what?
She gets all mad. Yeah.
Right.
Like, what? That's like everybody knows and they refuse to believe it. Where it's like such a funny character where they're so, they think they're so cultured and worldly, yet their views are extremely narrow.
Yeah.
Right. She's the worldly one of like that.
Of the two of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she immediately layered down of like, no, Meadow is the most. And Meadow.
And, they do a good job of making Carmela like, she still is pretty awful at the end of the day. And there's that great fucking scene with that Jewish therapist that she goes to see.
Oh, yes, totally.
And it's just a monologue that he gives where you're like, holy shit, where did they find this actor? He is incredible. And he refuses to take her money because he doesn't want blood money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That sequence is awesome when she's like, he just straight up is like, you're complicit to her.
It's the first time ever in the whole show someone just tells the absolute truth.
Yeah. It's like, why don't you leave him? Leave him.
The advice you would give anyone if they were like, I think my husband is a murderer. You'd be like, I think you should leave him. Oh, talking about the therapist characters, Bogdanovich as Melfi's therapist.
God. Oh, man.
And he's like very interesting and stoic, but as he becomes a fan, it gets so much, like when he becomes a fan
of
Tony.
He's such a piece
of
shit later.
He starts doing the nose thing and stuff. Yeah, and he like outs Tony. Like, I can't remember the like Jeopardy clue he gives, but it's like, what is a high-pitched singer and also like a fucking mob boss? It's like something like that.
Right.
Which is like, and it's also, it's sad in that like everyone kind of like every person fails, and it kind of feels like Dr. Melfi, who is one of the only people you can really root for in the entire show, she also kind of fails Tony at the end. I mean, like, she shouldn't leave him in that moment. I think that he is a sociopath, and I think that he is a bad guy, and like, she can't cure that. But I also thought it was the wrong time to leave him personally.
I mean, it really stuck with me when someone flat out tells her, I can't remember if she's reading it or because they're showing passages in the book, and it's about how they act really caring about babies and animals, which is like Tony's whole fucking thing. Pyomai, the fucking dog Christopher kills, and all the fucking cute little babies, which always made me think of Trump when he was talking about the autism shot, like the fucking vaccine shots. He's like, these little babies, they stick it in them. I'm like, he sounds so much like Tony.
That is that like toxic alpha male shit too, though, to be like, I love my like, there's moments in the show that really related to me in a weird father-son dynamic. Like when AJ, all he needs from his dad is support, and like he doesn't get it. But later Carmela's like, Carmella's like, Tony, AJ needs you. And he's like, I put food on the table and I'll kill for him. Is that like, and it's like, that's what these guys think is like being a good father is like, I'll kill for on behalf of them. No one will ever hurt them. I mean, if they do, I'll get revenge on them. And it's like that dynamic is so real. And I think it plays into like, when she reads that passage, it's like, they even say like their mother is like important to them. Like it's like women and stuff. And it's like the realest fucking shit.
I also
it's
the love whole, like his whole love of animals, but he does not have one at any point.
Right.
That's a great call. Yeah.
You bringing up him and AJ made me, I think it's No Context Sopranos on Twitter. My favorite one that they've posted is just a picture of AJ without his eyebrows, and then Tony in the kitchen looking at him, and the caption is, "What's different about you?"
Man,
there's a Twitter thread. There's a Twitter that is just AJ's nu metal shirts too.
Oh, he listens to some terrible music.
A Bogdanovich moment. That because this is the stuff that doesn't age well, but was so funny at the time that I feel like new people to the Sopranos won't get how good it was. There's a moment where he's listening to Melfi in their therapy session. So Bogdanovich is Melfi's therapist, and he reaches down and grabs water off camera, and it's a huge bottle of water with netted plastic bags and the harness. And I was like, that is the funniest fucking prop. Because like a certain kind of person had that in like 2004. And because that doesn't exist anymore, but it was like so on point for that guy.
It's such a real thing to be like, I'm trying to drink more water. Like my aunt had like a big, with one of those bendy straws, with a big mug. It was like a Weight Watchers mug with a handle that she would be drinking. She's like, you're supposed to drink a gallon of ice cold water every day. It's like, all right, you're still fat, Aunt Paula.
Gamers, you bring it up, we've talked about it before, but when AJ is sitting in the room when Tony's in a coma and he's talking to him about the car is just the funniest. That might be the best moment of the entire show. It's like, oh, he's finally bonding there. He's there for his dad, and he's talking to him about something. He's talking about a fucking car. Some fucking like, bullshit. Like...
bullshit. But that's relatable, too. That's relatable, too, to be like, I have one thing I can talk to my dad about where it's not a problem.
Oh, dude, I've literally been in that. Like when my dad was dying, I had to visit him in the hospital 14 days in a row. And just be like, he's kind of half in it, out of it, you know, whatever. And you're like, well, anyway, so I'm doing improv in New York, and you know, we got blah, blah, blah. You just don't even know what to say. So you just fucking blather about shit.
And you're nervous, and you're like, I'll just fill the time. Yeah. Like, yeah, you don't have to answer. I'll just tell fucking stories after story.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of like, are you going to eat that? And then he wouldn't respond because he was in a coma, so I'd go for it.
Demoing his like, how many insurers have you had?
Paulie goes in to talk to him and just starts complaining, and all his fucking shit goes like starts.
It breaks through to Kevin Affinity.
Yes, right.
God,
that is
so
such
funny.
A fucking. It's so crazy. There's an episode where the main character lives like a fucking alternate life inside a coma, and it's not just played for like how weird this is. Like it all has like meaning and shit.
Yeah.
He's slapped by a Buddhist monk.
I forgot that's about amazing. That.
Which is like, I think in the book it says like, I think it says like a thing about your character if a monk would slap you in the face. Right? Like, and it's just like, that's how bad Tony is.
Yeah. It's also sad just watching that because you're like, oh, this is maybe like what James Gandolfini is more like in real life, is kind of more like his Kevin Fernandy character. And then then he had to like, he was like doing coke and punching himself in the head. I mean, like it's the greatest, it's maybe the greatest TV performance of all time. I mean, it is. And so it's like, He did it. He did an insane job, but it's like, man, it must have been so hard for that guy to stay in that fucking
to be
terrible
him.
State constantly.
To be a fucking psycho for like 8 years.
Chase says it in the book. He's like, he keeps calling him Jim, which is, I love shit like that. He's like, I think a guy like Jim, he's really nice and sweet. It ate at him playing Tony. And yeah. It's like, that's fucking crazy. It's
careful,
like,
Stanger will start calling him Jim when we talk about it.
Yeah, Stanger's on like a first name basis. Like he's a Marty. Like he's like three steps past Marty in reference to Scorsese. Like Marty, who are you talking about? He's like Martin Lawrence. You're like what? We're tired. I call him Marty. Show featured so many great guest stars, but the best thing about rewatching The Sopranos is rewatching any old prestige drama for me is very exciting to see where those guest stars like. It's a random huge actor is an actor who would later become huge as a guest star.
Yeah.
Or someone pops up and you're
Lady
like, that's
Gaga?
The guy from everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lady Gaga is,
yeah,
is
Paul
in this.
Dano.
Paul Dano.
Right.
I think they asked Robert Patrick what his favorite role ever was. And I think he said that the Sopranos, the when he was on Sopranos for that. Whatever. I mean, he was in it for what, like four episodes or so?
He had a few.
Yeah. He had a good run.
He came back a little bit, but he like mentioned that as like one of his favorite or most like memorable roles he ever did, which I agree. He's great in it. Yeah, there's so many people that pop in and out that are so
Buscemi,
good.
Buscemi, Joey Pants. These guys like bring
Ben
so much.
Kingsley.
God, Kingsley. I forgot what? About Ben Kingsley.
As himself. As
man, that's so funny.
Oh, yeah.
Them wanting what is it? What Chris says
Kundun. I liked it.
I love it. I liked it.
I liked it. There's something about the specificity of that. I loved it, but I liked it.
It's like it's like he's acknowledging that no one likes it, and it's like, but not me.
No, I liked it.
I'm an outlier here. I thought it was good.
I watched this movie that Chase recommended. It's with Danny Glover. It's called The Sleep with Anger, I think, and. It's pretty good. Like you can see a lot of the Soprano stuff in there. The reason I bring it up is because it's kind of has in a movie sense, like every season somebody new comes in, they shake everything up. And then like, it's kind of, how do we get this person off or move on from them? That was sort of the model for a lot of the seasons. And the book is kind of like that. It's like Danny Glover shows up. He fucking causes family to have total chaos. And then the movie is also filled with a ton of subtle supernatural shit throughout.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, oh, okay, he's really like, he definitely took a page from this movie. And you can kind of see the DNA of Sopranos in all the stuff that Chase talks about.
When Paulie goes to the fucking... going off the supernatural shit, when Paulie goes to like the psychic and the psychic is like sees actual
God,
characters.
Who you been talking to?
Yeah, it's so fuck. And
he can't sleep
just,
that night.
They just play that as the psychic was real and was right, mm-hmm. and they never speak like. And it comes up every once in a while. Oh, and
Christopher
when fucking,
with the bird, and then like, is it like it's not even the same episode where he's like that fucking bird.
They're so good at calling back to shit from a while ago.
In the Christopher episode, when he describes hell, he's like, it's Italian hell. It's an Irish bar that's St. Patrick's Day every day. Yeah. And it's like, but they're both really spooked about it when it like ends up. Like, I just love that. Like, who said it early on that it's really about like superstition and weird? Like,
oh, they're all freaked out by, especially Paulie. Like, he's the most. And then he pays off the church to kind of like forgive him.
Yeah.
what is everyone's favorite? Because rewatching it, I found out. Well, it wasn't when I first watched the show, and I think this is maybe a part of the reason why, is like I really got into it during season four. And then when I rewatched it, I loved season four again. But a lot of people don't think season four is great. But where do you guys... I mean, also the last season is incredible too. But do you guys have a favorite season or no?
Yeah, I love them all.
Five is great.
Which is... I can't delineate what happens
Steve
in what.
Steve Buscemi returns as Tony B.
Right, right.
And Tony S. has to like recalibrate his life around like this person that he feels guilty about going to prison. It's like back in his life.
Oh wait,
yeah.
That's season five. That's my favorite season too. I'm sorry. That season. Yeah,
the Buscemi.
The Buscemi season. Yeah. Buscemi season is my favorite season.
Yeah,
I thought that was season four for some reason.
No, it was five.
That's five. Five is my favorite.
I mean, it's hard. It's easy to get them fucked up because HBO did that stupid shit where they were like, it's six A and B.
They started it. That's a trend now. Yeah. That's how you rip people fucking off.
That's how you. That's how you don't get to the renegotiation level of a fucking contract.
They came up with that scam.
Yeah. So fucked
up. On Sopranos, a scam show, which is funny.
Yeah, they're getting scamming the cast of a scam show.
I think one of my favorite scam. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. If you were going to say your favorite season.
Oh no. You go.
I was just speaking of scams. I just made me remember like the. Whatever episode it was with the calling cards.
Like that's Funhouse.
Okay, yes, Funhouse.
Season two.
And at the end you see the guys on the street like passing on the cards.
I know, that's great.
You get to see it trickle down, and it does a really good job of showing like what pieces of shit these guys are and how they're feeding off the most vulnerable people. Like all the it's like African immigrants. Which is another whole theme of the show is like these guys shitting on black people.
Yeah. Yes.
God. Yeah.
Oh, Ben, you're saying something about the show that I really like too is they show you the fucking ripple effect every once in a while of what these guys, where they're like, just a reminder, this is having a negative effect on society as a whole.
By
like,
the way,
the carjackings, the random cold open carjacking, and you're like, what the fuck? Who's this family? And then later on, he's like, yeah, I can get BMWs pretty easily. Yeah. And you're like, oh, you piece of shit. The family's like horrified. And the landscaper dude who like is in the middle of
Salvitro.
Gavers, I got to say, you made me very nervous by saying, you pointed out another thing of the show that I liked when he was talking about how it's ripping on black people. Yeah,
I mean, it's earnest. It's honest. It's a good call. It's a way to call out the those people who are like third generation here. And they're like, do you know what Italians went through when we first got to this country? It's like you were born in 1968 when your dad already had a house in the suburbs. Like it's not the same for you.
The Columbus Day episode is the funniest. That episode is so funny. That whole episode is so good.
The
Columbus Parade one or whatever it is.
I didn't know it until I read the Sopranos sessions, but it did make me sad about the Columbus Day episode because it was written for Paulie Walnuts, but he fucked his back up, so they had to like rewrite it for Sill. In the book, they call it out how it's like, it makes zero sense.
It doesn't quite fit
his
character. Yeah, yeah. Sill, it's funny watching the pilot and because there's such a chunk of time in between and like Sill's just kind of like a random guy in the pilot. And then he's like, this ends up being this huge
Sill is so hired for just to have that face that he has, which is like his lip protruding out. And he looks very like he looks like a very much like an Italian character guy, but he's not. Paulie Walnuts is so much better in the show. Yeah, he's great.
Sill looks like a dude trying to do a De Niro impression that would crack up his coworkers, even though it's bad.
Yeah. I love how much he does.
He's the cut up. He's the cut up in the group.
Yeah, he's like, and then I was back in. And he remembers Godfather lines. Peak entertainment in that kind of friend group.
And
is
also, it's that line like a lot.
Yeah, it's always that line. They go, do it, Steve. And he stands up. He's like, he like sets himself up for it. And it's just like medium. It's like medium performance.
It's not a good impression at all. It's not a good impression. It's so funny that they constantly want to see it.
Sill's a fun character because you're like, this guy's fun. He's kind of cool. And then like the one time you see him do anything, it's like just randomly smashing a woman's face. Like it's violence against an innocent woman.
Fucked up.
And you're like, and they're like, that's a smart play. It's like, you probably thought you were just okay watching this guy.
He's charismatic, but...
Yeah, exactly.
But he's actually a pimp.
He owns a strip club.
Most of them want fake tits, but she wanted the braces. I juice them.
Do you know what
Johnny
I feel?
Sack loving his fat wife and being mad about
that's,
it.
That's so beautiful. It makes me love John. It makes me think Johnny Sack is one of the people that you're supposed to kind of like a little bit just because he's so protective of his wife, and it's fucking awesome.
And it's really funny because they show you the joke the moment And it is funny and it is crazy. And then, like, you see everyone laugh. And then you, as it gets to be more and more of a problem, you see everyone, like,
pretend they weren't there.
Yeah, like, who would say that? It's like, they were all wrong. Tony even made a joke, right? Didn't, like, Tony tag it or something? I feel like Tony tagged it or instigated it. But, like, and it's just so fucking perfect. All the weasels, they all just back out of it, like, immediately.
Him constantly kind of needling. This is another Olivia Soprano thing that he does to Johnny Sack, where Johnny Sack gets the new car and he's like, what's his wife's name? He's like, has she driven in it yet?
She's like, Jenny.
Yeah, has Jenny driven in it yet? And he's like, she can't, her knees, the poor thing. Like,
she did this to herself. Like,
I think he blames it on dancing. He's like, she used to be quite the hoofer or something.
Dude, he finds the fucking candy.
Finds her on all fours eating
devouring.
It's too fucked up.
I can't be the only one who related to that moment here, right? Am
I? I gotta tell you, I have not been on all fours devouring candy. Yeah. I've done a lot of things.
I'm like, I've had some food lows. Like, you know.
Yes.
Oh, that's on top of the garbage.
Yeah. Mine are more in the salty, fatty realm.
Mine are over the sink.
Yeah. Mine are a lot like, I think the container was closed in the garbage, so it's fine.
My mom puts a bowl of candy on the ground every night for me. I get down on all fours and I eat it.
If you're good. Yeah. If you're good.
By the way, I feel like we really have the same energy as, I'll just share the picture with you. We're really pulling this energy right now. The talking funny. I feel like we're the talking funny crew.
What is that?
That was the show that fucking what's his name from The Office put together.
Gervais is like, let's get comedy icons to all talk comedy, and he gets Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Louis C.K., and himself. Has anything aged worse than this?
Charlie, if you can watch it, you should. It's something that HBO Max is not going to ever. I don't even know if you can. If it's on there, honestly.
No, it was so bad.
Because they even like made fun of Gervais a little bit. Because Gervais would try to roll with them of like, yeah, when you're on tour. And they're all like, how long have you been doing stand-up? A year?
He just wants to play with the big boys so bad.
That's amazing.
And there's like talk of like words you can and can't use, and we don't have to get into
and
it.
They talk about Louis. Chris Rock makes a joke about imagine Jerry using the N-word, which is just like a really funny visual. But then Louis, that like they make the joke that Louis does do it, like just Chris Rock and Louis use, and you're like, yikes.
They gotta fawn over Cosby in that too at some point, right?
Oh, I guess
those guys love fucking drooling over Cosby. Did you guys ever see Comedian?
Yeah, I saw
that documentary with Jerry and that other guy.
Yeah, there's apex is him meeting Cosby.
Yes, right. Fucking Jerry and Rock both fucking talk about how good Cosby was for so long.
I saw Cosby in concert. Was it before or after Everything Went Down? I think it was before.
You saw him do a prison show.
I saw him at San Quentin. Live from Folsom. Sit down comedy.
He doesn't write it. He can still just riff a full hour.
He's still got it.
Yeah.
He's in line for the prison dessert being like, ooh.
Ooh.
I would like to say that I was like above it and that I was like, this is boring shit, but I was like, this is awesome. I like bragged to so many people after I saw it, and I don't bring it out too often anymore. But
yeah, a lot of his jokes now I don't get. I'm sure I'll get them when I eventually get glaucoma.
I look forward to really getting into Cosby stuff later on. Down the road, I'm going to become a huge Cosby.
I don't relate to it. Like, maybe someday I will.
Guys, thank you so much for fucking coming on High and Mighty and screaming about Sopranos with me. This is all I wanted to do on Zoom, and I was like, oh, if I make it a podcast, then people will
come.
Official.
Yeah.
The hard thing with Sopranos is that you could scream about the length that we just did for every episode.
Yes.
But you know, remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
Ooh, That hits fucking hard.
That does
when
hit hard, yeah.
And you feel bad for Paulie totally. In that moment. Yeah, you're like, and then Paulie, again, like, he's a great character because you're sympathetic, and then he annoys you, then he's sympathetic.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you're like, what a loser. Then you're like, oh, what a loser.
The fucking camera shot on that boat of him just being like.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah. That's so crazy. Oh, yeah.
when he fucking kills the old lady who finds him searching through her fucking, you're like, oh my God, these guys are such pieces of shit. I love it.
Gabrus, were you weirded out at all when you came to my apartment and you saw the picture of you as Napoleon on my wall?
Oh man, I hope a high mighty listener makes that happen.
Yeah, post, that would be amazing.
Next to painted me next to a giant Wally. I'm standing in a Napoleon outfit next to your big cat.
Oh shit, I would love that.
So let's open up the plug bag. I gotta play a 3-minute song from Ben Schwartz, and all right, the editor should have put it in there. Okay. you guys all have great fucking podcasts. If my listeners probably know about all of them, but let's go around the horn. All right, Mike.
Call out who should start.
Mike Mitchell.
I should have thought
Ben Rogers.
Clockwise.
I mean, Sanders, why don't you plug your podcast? I do one with Gabrus, so it seems ridiculous to plug it.
Charlie, right. tell the shitheads a little bit about your podcast. I'm guaranteeing half of my podcast listeners would relate to your show.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's called Bald Talk. It's me and Brian Husky, two bald comedians, and interview comedians, actors, directors, personalities, celebrities, whoever that's bald about being bald. It's on the Big Money Players Network, produced by Will Ferrell, on iHeartRadio.
And you've had some big bald celebs on.
We have, yeah, we've had a number. Yeah, we had Karamo on from Queer Eye. We had Stephen Tobolowsky. Tony Levin is next week, who's played with every 70s and 80s and 90s musician you've ever heard of.
And you've also had some of the hair on as well, right?
We had Rob Hubel on because he stopped dyeing his hair. that's it so far, but that's our only hair guest.
The good thing about your podcast is that plenty of guests are just a 6 months to a year around the corner.
There'll be more. Yeah, there'll be more. So it's Bald Talk. You can find it on iTunes and iHeartRadio.
Yeah, I'll see you in 10 years about, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Mike Mitchell.
You can listen to the Doughboys podcast on HeadGum and on iTunes, and we have a double on Patreon.
Hell yeah.
You don't have to listen to it, but thank you.
Well, if you do have money for Patreon, I would say pass on the Doughboys double and spend it on Ben Rogers' podcast, which I'm a huge fan of.
Check out Action Boys with a Z.biz.
Give it a listen. Rogers is great on it, and I'm financially a part of it as well. So let's fucking rock and roll.
My mom, before this podcast started, my mom was very nervous. She was telling me that there's a History of Pizza show on tonight, and she wants to watch it with me. And
and she's nervous?
She's like, I hope it doesn't go too long. It starts at 10. So I was like, all right, I'll see if I can go sit up
in your room. You're on the Eastern... You're on the Eastern Coast of America. The Far West, if you will. You're sitting down to watch the History of Pizza with your mom at 10 p.m.
That's right.
The most Mike Mitchell thing I've ever heard. I mean, unless you don't pay attention to the show at all and just look at your phone the entire time.
That will
then
happen
that's
as well.
The most Mitchell thing.
That will happen. I'll be texting you.
Guys, thank you so much for coming on. I just finished a rewatch of The Sopranos, and now I want to watch it again. Oh, we get pumped for Saints in Newark.
Yeah. Oh, that, right. Totally. So pumped.
I can't believe I auditioned for Saints of Newark, and I told you, and I can't believe you should be in that movie, Gabrus. You would be perfect for it. It's fucked up. You're not in there.
I would be a young Bobby Bacala.
It would be.
I know we're just literally wrapped, and you guys are so excited to hang out with your respective moms, but one of my favorite scenes in the whole fucking show. I can't believe it. I just want to take a chance. When they're playing the fucking board game at Bobby's cabin.
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna,
oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's too real for me. It's like from a family of violent alcoholics. Where I'm like, but watching like.
Every time I try to get out of this podcast, you pull me back in.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow,
body blow, body.
Someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it! Come on! Do it now!